everyone. Adam here for another bonus episode of TFG Radio. And today I'm joined by Bruce Merker. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, how's it going?
And Bruce, you're the organizer?
Yes, I'm the tournament organizer for the Dallas Open.
Okay, for the Dallas Open, which this year I believe is in, I want to say, April.
Right, it's April 12th through 14th.
Okay, so before we get into that, I just want to give you, if you can, just give us a little background on yourself. You know, how'd you come into playing 40K? How long you've been playing for 40K? Or just
okay.
Games in general?
Well, I think it was about, well, I've always been into games. Huge game nerd. Played Magic, you know, when I was a kid, you know, before it got really crazy. I like that as a casual game, but I'm very competitive, and in most of the games that I play, I like to play to win. I don't know, it satisfies some need or something, I don't know. You can ask my therapist. But I saw it initially when I was in a game store picking up D&D books and seeing these guys play these games like Battletech. And I was watching them play this game. I'm like, what is that? And they're like, oh, it's Warhammer. So I saw first edition being played. Didn't start playing myself until second edition kicked off. And so I started playing at that time. And my first army was a Space Marine army. And I played that and into third. Went into the military, stopped playing for a while, came back, picked up Dark Eldar because they were the really cool figures the time. And then I played them on and off for the next, you know, decade or so. Took a hiatus because I was married and, you know, I was in prison, wasn't allowed to do anything cool. You know, and then, you get out of it and you get back into it. It's just all about life, you know?
Right.
So I've been playing more or less since second edition. And then somewhere along in towards the end of sixth edition, I decided that I wanted to try to get competitive and actually, like, try to win tournaments. And that was a slow process. And and only now have I really actually, like, broken through and won a couple of events. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's only recently when you started playing at like RTTs and things like that?
Well, I mean, I've gone to a lot of majors over the last 5 years or so. I really kind of started traveling. I was living up in Vermont for a while, so I got my fill of like Du Bois, GT and Battle for Salvation and Nova Open, which I fell in love with. That's absolutely my favorite event out there.
Okay.
So well done, and I love the format and everything. And I've been to ATC and Crucible and Iron Halo. Haven't been to the West Coast ones yet. I'm going to probably start going to those in a year or so. But I've got a lot of experience losing, you know, that's helpful.
Yeah, well, you know, they say you learn more when you lose than when you win.
Right.
Like, yeah, and I know, especially one player in our local area, that he must learn a lot because he loses a lot. But but have you played any other GW games like Fantasy before it became Age of Sigmar or
you know,
specialist?
You know, I never played Fantasy, and it wasn't that I didn't like the concept, because I like Fantasy, love Lord of the Rings, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I never got into it because you could always find somebody who was playing 40K,
right,
but you didn't always necessarily, you know, have people in the area that played Fantasy. And so that was really the barrier to getting into it, right? And there's nothing worse than, like, a new game coming out, and you're, like, super excited, and you're like, oh, this is a great game with great mechanics. And then, you know, 6 months later, it's not the hotness, and it dies out. And so that's why that's one of the reasons why 40K I gravitated towards, because it's got staying power.
Yeah, I have essentially a bookcase full of those types of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, the settings were cool, or the figures were cool at the time, maybe it was a game mechanic, I just never caught on. I mean, we still see it today with a lot of the Kickstarter stuff.
Yeah, and you're like begging people to play. I'll buy your models for you.
Oh, yeah.
Just play with me.
Because you didn't play any of the specialist games? It's just 40K.
You know, I just play 40K. That's really the only thing I have time for anymore. You know, even though I really don't have family responsibilities anymore, you know, my kid's grown. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can disappear for like 4 or 5 days at a time and, you know, she can feed herself and stuff.
Yeah. My daughter's grown also, but, and she has no inclinations to come visit us. So that's fine. She takes after her dad. I was the same way at her age. I still am like that now. I don't talk to my parents very often. But you didn't play anything else, like you said, because there wasn't any place to any players around.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't like Magic because, like, I enjoyed playing it. You know,
casually.
I guess, yeah, casually. But when you got into the competitive scene, it was all it was all about deck building, mm-hmm. you know. And then it was like, you know, draw one, draw two, draw three, you're dead. And I just didn't like that. And I don't know if it's changed since then, but you know, between that and my I have very sensitive sense of smell, mm-hmm. and so no, I mean it's. We have it a little bit in our game too, but right. it's kind of bad in Magic, so I can't do it.
That's funny. Yeah, because I know, like I mentioned Kickstarter, are there any games that interest you but you know you can't play because you know nobody plays it?
Some of the ones that I thought were kind of interesting is like a Blood Bowl.
Okay.
I think that's interesting. I, you know, could see myself you know, getting into that passively. I played a couple of games of Kill Team. I think it's cool. It's like Warhammer, you know, but you can complete a game in like 40 minutes, yeah. Which is important to a much larger audience, you know, rather than the guys who love Punishment like we do and we play like 12 hours straight of wargaming. But other than that, like board games I like,
okay.
You know.
So, yeah. You know what? Board games are okay for me, but I've never been able to get into it like some people do nowadays. It's just, I don't know what it is about it. Maybe some of the concepts of some of the games just don't appeal to most of them from what I've seen. Like, I know there's one, I forget what it was called, where the whole point of the game is to get people to their correct terminal at an airport. And I don't know why that appeals to people. It does not appeal to me at all.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I know there's some of the other games that are more like 40K or like Warhammer Quest type of games.
Haven't played that. Yeah. I like some of the dungeon crawlers, like D&D put out a couple.
What's the one that Fantasy Flight put out? Descent.
No, I never played Descent either. That's like, you know, one of those games that you always see on like Board Game Geek or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that'd be, you know, that sounds really interesting. But you know, I haven't played it or like Pandemic or, you know, something like that. I did play like a House on Haunted Hill or something like that, mm-hmm. where it's like a co-op and you're exploring a haunted house. And then all of a sudden in the middle of the game, it randomly flips and one of you turns into a possessed demon and everybody else has to like kill him or escape.
Right.
You know, those are, I like those kind of games. Those are cool. You know, Puerto Rico, you know, things like that. So I have a lot of fun with those. Twilight Imperium, but you know, who wants to sit down for a 6-hour game?
Oh my God.
I do. I'm the only one, right?
I think the newer version pared it down to like, I think 4 or 5 hours now.
Yeah, and I don't have that version either.
Blood Bowl is actually a really, it's arguably probably their best rule set in term compared to like the other GW games and for a lot
you
of
mean
people,
like balance or game balance or something?
Game balance, just because everything, I don't even know how to describe it, because everybody it's almost like chess where you have certain moves, you can move certain ways. But the only thing are, and their skill sets, there's other different things, but everybody has a chance. Now,
right.
In my opinion, and this is just my opinion, the elves have a little bit of an edge because they have better agility, which is a
well,
thing.
Well, all right then, man. You're convincing me already.
But what it teaches you, and this was very anyone that played Blood Bowl before 8th edition was able to cope with this more than most people, from my experience when 8th dropped. What it taught you was the agony of re-rolling a 1 into another 1.
Oh, yeah.
At the most crucial moment of a game.
Yeah, now it's called Vect.
Vect, or it's just, okay, I'm going to command re-roll this roll. Oh, it's another 1. Okay,
yeah, great. Just the other day I had a Warlock, and he was casting Quicken, which is super important. And he rolls double 1s. He's only got 2 wounds.
Right.
You know? So he rolls double 1s. Of course, he's sitting right in a pocket right in the middle of my army. And I roll double 1s. I'm like, okay, command re-roll. I roll another 1. His head pops. You know, there's a crater.
Yeah. That forms. Like I said, and Blood Bowl, the difference between Blood Bowl and 40K especially, and Age of Sigmar, is for Age of Sigmar 40K, certain die rolls basically make or break the game. You know, there's,
yeah.
You know, whether it's to...
Yeah, they can.
But in Blood Bowl, literally every roll of the die will make or break your game. It makes every roll important in Blood Bowl.
Huh.
Whether it's to throw a pass, catch a ball, because every time you fail a roll, it's more or less a turnover, and you give up the rest of your turn. So imagine not making an armor save, and because you didn't make it, your turn is done.
Oh, wow.
So you have to plan, like, what you're going to do. You do the simple stuff first, and then you do the complex stuff afterwards, because if you fail those, then you're done.
Right.
So if you forget to do something, and you can't go back and do it after you've already failed something. So it makes those rolls very important. And that's why it makes those re-rolls very important, because you only have two or three re-rolls throughout the game. And it can be very stressful. However, if you get tilted really easily, I do not suggest Blood Bowl at all.
It's funny you should mention that, because I used to get tilted in 40K a lot, and I've gotten a lot better about it now. But I think, anybody who's played 40K knows that in 7th edition, especially, it got so bad with cheaters. That when I was playing somebody and I perceived that they were, you know, trying to cheat me, I would kind of flip and get tilted.
Right.
So it's gotten a whole lot better in 8. There's a lot less to argue about. The TOs and the community in general have gotten a lot better about, holding players accountable, for their actions. And so everybody's behavior's improved, right? Because you create, you create that environment, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious in regards to that. How much of the new behavior of certain players is curtailed because they either don't go to the event or certain events, or now they have to mind their P's and Q's.
Well, they definitely know, and everybody else does, because everybody knows who those people are.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I really do feel like a lot of the top players, when you start getting into like top 50 players, mm-hmm. in the country, these are people who are, you know, switched on, and you know, you're playing a game with them and you do something and they point out like, oh yeah, you can't do that, or this obscure rule that you didn't know about, you know, or you play at your local store differently and all of a sudden, wow, that's going to swing the game. And you get pissed off at the person, and they're just following the rules. And
right.
Then, you know, and then you're like, oh, that guy's a cheater. Well, he's not a cheater. He just knows all of the rules. Now, there's a difference between that and having an extra bolt pistol, you know, or an extra plasma gun, or, you know, all of your 7th edition formation guys are objective secured at the end of the game when they really aren't. You know, things
right.
like that. Things like that, you know, that's a different class of players, and those people will be dealt with now.
Yeah, you know, well, I forget what the phrase is. I think it's blood will out, but basically that's more or less. We'll see what happens. I'm curious to see how the new ITC season goes and how it develops, especially depending on how many events, one, use the code of conduct, which I think most are.
I completely intend on using it.
There's really no reason not to.
There really is no reason not to. And there's a couple of things that are like, oh, I don't know, you know, about that one. But honestly, if you read the document, it allows the TO a lot of freedom to downgrade or upgrade a penalty based on, you know, intangibles that, you know, or don't report well on the internet flaming afterwards. But, you know, in the moment, the TO a lot of times, you know, has an idea of what they need to do. So I think it gives them sufficient freedom to do the right thing. And it also gives TOs the cover that they need, because when they're like, okay, well, we're going to have to remove that model or that unit or that detachment, and the player gets upset, you can just point right back to that code of conduct and say, you know, don't blame me. You know, this is the document that you play to. It was posted on the website. You know, you had the opportunity to review it beforehand, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, when we were talking about it in the initial concept, because of my background with the soccer thing and my theory, that the reason we have these ambiguities and even the term spirit of the game is a soccer term, or a term from soccer that they teach you. I don't know if you play or not, or coached or.
No, I've seen enough. You know, with the kids playing and all, but yeah.
So yeah, so that's more or less where the direction we decided to go in regards to how to best implement a code of conduct, which is essentially just the same as soccer, where the referee determines the severity of the offense, and then should give the appropriate punishment for the infraction. But yeah,
and it gives all the players a very clear understanding of what expected behavior is. Because after reading the code of conduct, there were a couple of things in there that I was like, ooh, I don't do that. You know? And, you know, from my perspective, you know, in my worldview, like, every bad guy thinks that they're the good guy, right?
Right.
You know, so, and there was a couple of things that I didn't do. Like, somebody had asked me, like, can your guys, you know, can they move? How far can your guys move? You know, and I'd say 22 inches, mm-hmm. you know, or my bikes, right?
Right.
But then I don't mention the fact that I can quicken them and then soul burst move them and be, you know, 73 inches across the table, you know, and just ramming lances up your rear.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't mention that. And now with the code of conduct, it's like, hey, look, you know, full disclosure, if your guys can do that under certain circumstances, you know, disclose that. And so for me, that's really helpful, because I'm like, okay, now I know the rules, and I know that that's what I'm expected to tell people, and I know that that's what people are expected to tell me. Because nobody likes playing where, you know, the gotcha moment,
right?
You know, and miscommunications that end up being perceived differently. Like a recent game at Iron Halo, I was playing a guy, we're deploying, and he says, okay, I'm setting these guys up in this magic box exactly 1 inch from the walls. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, whatever. He didn't tell me why he was, what his intent was, you know? And so I was like, okay, whatever, dude. Yeah, you're in the magic box and you're an inch away from the walls. Okay. And then, you know, I get first turn. I fly my spears over there and, fly them over like 6 inches away from the wall. Of course, I can't shoot them. So obviously I'm intending to charge them. He doesn't say a word, you know, while I'm moving them, but, oh, hey, you know, you can't charge these guys because the wall is a millimeter thick and you won't be able to be within 1 inch or something like that. And, you know, it created an issue for us and, unfortunately, you know, an uncomfortable moment when otherwise our game was, you know, really good and we had a really good game. But, yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing in War Machine where if someone asks you basically a question about your unit, you be as forthcoming as possible. That's where it's on your opponent. If they ask you, hey, what does this do? And if you give them the full information and they still make that same mistake, then it's on them because you told them everything that they needed to know.
Yeah. And the other thing I really like is the movement, you know, because way back in the day, you know, it used to be you pick a unit and you move that unit and then you're done, man. You can't move that again. You can't go, oh, you can't move two or three other units and then be like, oh, I kind of want to fit this HQ guy through this, you know, hole, but I didn't leave enough room. I'm just going to shuffle these guys around so that, you know, he can get through there and then charge you and wreck face.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, and the other real big problem with that was rocking your unit, right? So you, I'm going to go to the left, 12 inches. You know, and you move them all and you, I'll move them back. And then, maybe I'll move them right. No, I don't like that either. And then you move them forward and all of a sudden by rocking them back and forth, you got an extra like 2 or 3 inches of movement. And that's some serious benefit for some armies, right?
Yeah, and some, I don't know of any players, but I can see players doing that on purpose just to get those extra couple of inches. And some people seem to like you don't have to give someone a take back if you don't want to.
Yeah, that one's.
To be honest, it's part of the, and this is somewhat GW's. I don't want to say fault, but it's because GW put us in this mindset when we start playing anyway, before we become a competitive, hey, be a nice guy, be a gentleman.
Yeah, you know, beer hammer.
Yeah, and then when you get into a competitive, you're almost required to reverse that, and people assume because you're not going to give someone a take back, but you're being a jerk, and people don't want to be jerks, they want to be liked, they don't want a reputation. Yeah.
So well, and then you end up in a situation where, you know, at the beginning of the game, you're like, hey, let's have a good game and, you know, be cool and chill. You know, and if it's something, you know, minor, like, you know, you deep struck your units and then you started trying to move other guys, you know, for instance, that's like, what does it matter? You know, you're in your movement phase and nothing was interacting, you know, that's no big deal. I'll go ahead and let you do that because you have this kind of, we're going to have a good game. And then around turn 4, it kind of flips on its head with some guys. And then all of a sudden, you're like, I need to do this. And they're like, sorry. And then you're like, wow, that's game.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that, too. I've seen that. Yeah. But we'll see how it goes this upcoming LVO. But before we talk about that, one of the reasons I have you on, because you do, like you mentioned before, you have the Dallas Open.
Sure.
This is the second year, I believe?
Yeah, it's the second year. Last year was our first year, and we had a great event, pretty much just threw a bunch of money at it because I moved to DFW, and the first thing I did was find a local gaming store because, I mean, when any of us move somewhere, like before we move, we're not looking for a house or the right neighborhood or the good schools. We're like, where's the gaming store, and am I within 15 minutes of that place?
Right.
You know, so I get down here and I started asking the local guys, I'm like, oh, so what's the big event? Cause this is Dallas, man, like 8 million people in this Metroplex, right?
Right.
And, they're like, oh yeah, we don't have anything like that. And I was like, well, that's, we gotta fix that. So I'm not married, so I can't get in trouble for spending money. So I was like, well, I'll just throw down a couple of $1,000 and we'll get this ball rolling. So yeah, last year, we only had a 40K GT, busted right out of the gate with 72 people who actually showed up. Oh, nice. Sold a couple more tickets, but, you know, about 10% don't show.
Right.
So 72 people for your first year with no name recognition is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And this year I'm trying to control the growth because I'm into quality control, you know, big time, right? because I travel around, I go to tournaments, and, you know, last thing I want is somebody like, yeah, that's the guy who put on the crummy event and, you know, took everybody $65, yes. You know, and ran. So this year we're having a 40K GT of 120 players, okay. Which is, pretty good. And we're having a narrative, 40K event, but run by the narrative guys, these great guys that create this rich story that the players play over the weekend. For all the fluffy guys, because we want room for those guys too. Mm-hmm. And then we got a Horus Heresy event, 32 players, and we're adding Bolt Action, which is probably the most up and coming historical miniature game. And they Warlord Games is really great about supporting the community and working with TOs and just doing the right thing. So I'm excited about that. And then we've got a couple of Friday night events for guys who come into town early or, you know, get off and want to come down and see the tables and stuff. So we got little 4-hour events like a Kill Team or Night Joust where you can bring a 27 power level, model and more or less can play apocalypse, quick apocalypse games and swap teams around and, you know, you can, get out of there with a, you know, cool thing.
Yeah, so do you plan on expanding if more after that, or?
Oh yeah, man, we're going global, baby. No, next year, I'm probably going to add, like 20 more tables. We'll probably go to, the plan is to go to 160 players, based on our ticket sales already. I mean, we've already sold 47 tickets, and we're like 2.5 months out.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt in my mind that we're probably going to sell out. We're definitely going to sell out the narrative event. That's almost already sold out.
Oh, wow.
And so yeah, everything's going good. I think it's DFW area. We're next to an international airport hub. You can fly direct from anywhere in the United States here for really cheap. You don't have to have a connecting flight. You can catch a red eye and get back home on Sunday night, you not have to take Monday off of work. So it just makes a lot of sense. Plus, the tournament is 0.2 miles away from the Citadel. So if guys, can't get to Warhammer World, and Citadel's more or less Warhammer World, North America.
Yeah.
You can get down there on Friday and buy yourself a Forge World model and poke around in the store. And I'm not really the nostalgic type, but the store is really pretty cool, and their coffee is really good. So, I recommend it for sure. So,
your reason for doing it was basically because there wasn't a GT or GT level event in the area. I think the closest one is probably War Games Con, but I think that's in Austin, I believe.
Yeah, War Games Con's in Austin, and I think it's supposed to be like 4 hours away. I can make it in 2.5.
Yeah, for those that don't know how far between Dallas and Austin.
Yeah, Dallas is in northern Texas, so it's about 3.5 to 4 hours away from Austin, San Antonio, and Houston. And those are the cities that the other majors are in Texas. There's also one in El Paso. That doesn't quite make it to major status, but we actually have a Texas tournament circuit, where, all the tournament organizers, cross promote each other's events. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of, bounce rules off of each other so that we have consistency in ruling and really support each other. John Cook Jay Pina and all the Red Star guys down in San Antonio and Owens out in Houston and Vince in El Paso. Like, we all work together, and it's just been the greatest thing. That's one thing I love about Texans is they're just so friendly of people. They're just honestly, like, really just good, friendly people who want to help you out. So it's been a pleasure.
So, is this your first, like, big event, either 40K or non-40K, that you've had to organize before?
It is. Yeah, I've never organized anything before. I've had leadership roles at work, mm-hmm. and led projects, and now I'm into program management, and so I'm leading more people and more cross-functional, and managing a schedule and money and all that earned value craziness, right? But this is the only event planning that I've ever done, and I've actually found that it's made me a better manager at work.
Oh, okay.
Just going through the process, because especially in tournaments, most of the people are volunteers.
Right.
They're volunteering their time, and so it's much more difficult to go to them and say, look, you need to do this, and you need to do it right now. And I sent you an email 4 hours ago, and the expectation is that you're going to at least respond to the email within 4 hours and either tell me the answer or tell me your ECD on the answer.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you can't make anybody do anything. You have, even if you're paying them, right? Even if you have the power to fire them, if you can't get them to want to do what it is that you need them to do for the benefit of everybody, then it's not going to get done. So it's actually helped me a lot, because I'm a little bit short on the people skills. I'm much more logistics and strategy, minded.
Yeah, I was in charge of the. Our region's referees when my daughter was playing. And yeah, and it's all volunteers. The only way I could get them to do anything was basically give them free lunch. That was more or less what.
That's what I did. Lunch, beer.
Yeah.
You know, free tickets, to the event.
Yeah. Food and drink are a prime motivator for most people, apparently.
Really? It works. But you know, people help out out of the goodness of their heart.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll have the people who show up the first day, to help, build terrain or something, and then they realize that it's work and you never see them again.
Yes.
And, you know, then there's the other people who are, you know, they're there for the long haul and, yeah. And you know that you can count on them. And, it takes a while to identify those people, but once you get into a rhythm and after a couple of years, you start figuring out who you can depend on and, mm-hmm. and, then things go a lot better.
Did you have any issues? You mentioned a couple of them, but did you have really any big issues when you first started?
Well, I had somebody threaten to shoot me.
Okay, that sounds very Texas.
Yeah. so that there was that. That,
that, was
really
over,
wanna,
that was over 40K, or the
it was event? Over it was over prepping terrain.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Somebody just has problems. I don't really want to.
No. No.
But,
that's.
But
that's
but yeah,
more than enough.
Yeah, man. It but it, you know it happens, and you know, and you just got to figure out what you're gonna do, and you know, go forward. And especially since it was our first year,
right?
You know, by the time we got to the event and running the event, it went off pretty much without a hitch,
okay.
And everybody thought, wow, this is the best organized thing ever, especially for first year. And I believe it was. But they don't see everything that goes on behind the scenes, and a lot of people didn't even see that, and thank goodness too, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so that happened, and there's always stuff that happens, right? Terrain doesn't work out,
yeah.
Something falls through. Last year, my FLG mats, one of the boxes got lost in the mail, and I'm like freaking out because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be short mats, what am I gonna do? You know, and thankfully, the frontline guys, you know, hustled up, man, and really dug me out of that. But the other part of it was that I ordered early. I ordered a couple of months early and had everything, you know, laid out in a schedule. And so if I was behind on something, I knew I was behind on it. And that's what I would recommend to anybody. Like, if you plan on running one of these things, create a schedule, figure out how much time it's going to take to do each task. And I'll tell you what the terrain's going to be, the long pole in the tent.
Yes.
And make sure you get your arms around that, because you're going to end up with London GT terrain or or no terrain, or, you know, somebody's going to shoot you. So, and you don't want any of those things to happen.
No, especially the last one.
Yeah. Because you can't recover from that, you know? It's not like, oh, next year will be better. So, yeah. Make sure you do all those things, and you don't have to be crazy. You don't have to have like a Gantt chart, you know, and dependent tasks and things like that. But you need to know who's doing what and get it all organized and together, because just having everything organized and having a list of everything that you need to do and approximately when you need to do them mm-hmm. is just so critically important to making sure that it goes off.
Yeah. Why don't you give out the information right now? For people that want to look up
yeah. So you know, if you're interested in coming out to the tournament, all you have to do is go to our website, DallasOpenGT.com. You can buy your tickets there. You can review all of the rule sets for all of the games, whether it's 40K or Bolt Action or one of the narrative events or just a Friday event, and you can buy your tickets there. And you can even see who's going. We've got an attendee list up. It probably lags about a week or two behind ticket sales. So you can join the multitude of other people who email me and say, hey, I bought my ticket 5 hours ago, but it's not up on the website yet. And it doesn't auto-populate. you know, I'm lazy. I don't know what to tell you. I haven't gotten to it yet. But, you know, and all well and meaning, because, you know, people spend $100 or so on a couple of tickets, and, you know, they want to know that they're all set. So I completely understand that. But it does get crazy with all the moving parts, and updating the attendee list is probably like the last thing on my list of things to do. But, yeah, you can get all the information there. It's pretty much standard ITC rule set format, you know, measuring from the edge of the objective markers. You don't have to worry about first floor line of sight blocking because all of our terrain is 8th edition compatible. So we've got excellent line of sight blocking material on every single table. Every table has line of sight blocking material. You will not get alpha struck. We've got the L-shape ruin terrains. It's actually laid out like a Nova terrain set. Mm-hmm. And that's the format we use for our terrain. And we're actually running the Nova missions, partially because I feel like they're more tactically complex. Mm-hmm. They encourage you to take more troop choices. People, honestly, at the end of the season, they're kind of tired of the ITC championship missions of whatever iteration they are that year. And so, you know, they're tired of playing it and they want to play something else. And so we're doing that to kind of spice it up and be different.
Okay.
Oh, one of the things I did want to hit on was the prize support.
Okay.
Which is, I think it's pretty phenomenal. We're giving away 4 fat mats, 4 FLG mats, a firmer terrain, the alpha portable
the alpha
gaming table. That's going to just random, you know, random dude is going to get a portable gaming table. If you win the GT, you get a 3D printed, professionally painted chain sword. The other trophies are like LAS pistols or plasma pistols. These things look phenomenal. They're so beautiful, painted by a couple of painters in the area who are really good. Viet, I don't know if he's probably not well known outside of the state of Texas, but he's a great painter, and we got a couple other guys who are phenomenal as well. So there's that, and then our swag bags are, you know, pretty. You won't see anything like them outside of like the Nova First 400.
Right.
Free objective mark.
People love the bolt pistols and chainsaws. Remember the year at LVO where they gave out the chainsword? I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago.
I was there. You know, I didn't go last year.
No, this was the previous year, so it's 2 years ago.
Yeah. See,
2 years ago they had the chainsword. I think it was 2 years ago. And the
I think I was crying in my beer that year and might have missed the ceremony. So,
but that was the wooden spoon. It was the wooden chainsword.
Ah.
And one of our club mates literally went after that wooden spoon because he wanted the chainsword really bad.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
To the point where it was
comical.
Well, yes, yeah. And game 6, him and his opponent both wanted the chainsword. So I don't know how they worked it out or how they played their game. But I don't know. He must have somehow made him score more than he did. And then he ended up losing. He ended up going 0-6, ended up with the chainsword.
Oh, wow.
So happy. But people like that stuff. People like the bolt pistols, you know, the LAS pistol, especially, you know.
I think that they're awesome.
Yeah.
I think they're awesome prizes because you can mount them on your wall or in your display case, and when people come over, it's got a little metal plate on it that says, you know, Dallas Open, mm-hmm. you know, GT Champion, you know, 2019. You know, that's really cool stuff that you can look on, you know, later and go, yeah, that's not just a purity seal from some event and I forgot where it was that I got it.
Right.
You know, that's something really tangible that that's just it evokes memories, and that's what makes our game so great, right?
Yeah, yeah. Speaking, so we've talked a little bit about LVO in the past.
Yeah.
And you are going to LVO this year?
I am.
What are you bringing?
Oh, I'm bringing in the Eldar G's, man. Yanari
surprise,
Craft
surprise.
World. Yeah, yeah. Yanari Craft World with a unit of spears to jam down your throat on turn one. And then, you know, the Dark Reapers, where they'll, you know, Eldar trickery, man, you know, I'm going to shoot you and then go hide behind the wall. And I'm going to shoot you and I'm going to hide behind the wall. I may do it twice. Yeah. So I got that. And then, I've got the, Prophets of the Flesh, with some grotesques. And that's just a patrol. And, you know, pretty much that's just for, Horde because, Eldar's an elite army, struggles with a lot of bodies. So I actually have trouble with the Thousand Suns and the Chaos bomb list.
Right.
So I put that in there to help control that. And then I've got a Spearhead Blackheart with Ravagers because Orc Codex dropped, and I really need Vect to stop the Grot shenanigans with the Luda boys.
Right. So I'm curious. We didn't really talk about this, but actually we'll talk about it at the end. But going into it, it's Yunari, right?
Yeah.
So you're taking
it's Yunari, because I've been playing Yunari all year long, and if I place in the top 10% or the top 10 or something like that, then I'll have Yunari best in faction for the year.
Oh, okay.
Because I won March Madness, which was a major, about 60 people, and then I went undefeated and placed second at Iron Halo.
Oh, okay.
So, and then I got a couple other some RTT filler type garbage. Right. So, but LVO is so many points that you win that, and you could have lost. You could have gone 2-1 at 5 RTTs and still win best everything. I don't know.
is there any particular list or build or codex that you're afraid of?
Well, I believe that I can beat every list.
Okay.
And I always build an all comers army because my intention is not to, I think I'm going to face Castellan, so I'm just going to, put a whole bunch of clown bikes in there and just shoot them off the table and then win. And then you roll up against, a chaos player and, all that haywire is worthless. So I always build all comers lists, so I feel like I've got a chance against everybody, but I have to work at all the good lists. So, but I mean, there's a couple of lists that are particularly nasty. Of course, Castellan, the underpointed and ridiculously overpowered single model that, wrecks face on everything except for hordes. And then, you counteract that by putting 90 infantry models down on the table. Thanks, Tony Kopach. Sure. So, guys like him and Brandon. So I'm looking at their lists and planning out what I'll do and how I'll attack them, and then the orc lists. You got to account for Nick and Matt Root, who actually came down here to Dallas this last weekend and played in a little practice RTT with us, and he had his orcs, and it's a very similar list to Nick's, and great player. So, good practice. So, I mean, that is a no joke list, man. I mean, when you got like 23, Ludas that automatically hit on fives and reroll ones and shoot twice and you can't even target them. And, I'm going to jam 30 boys down your throat every turn, until you cave. That's hateful, So, I'll deal with that. And I think, the chaos bomb lists have lost a little bit of their luster. Mm-hmm. Each nerf in and of itself wasn't a big deal. The cultists only being able to come back once a game was not that big of a deal. And then, oops, they can't infiltrate. Okay, well, I can still play them in a different way in my backfield. And then, an extra point per guy. And then Zangors went up a point, and then what they got out of it, which is greater demons, which were garbage before, a little bit better, wasn't quite enough to counteract all that. So I think they kind of took a hit. Yunari took a hit, progressively. The extra 3 points for Shining Spears was not really that big of a deal. The fly nerf hurt them a lot. And changed their role to more of a infantry, deletion unit and a distraction Carnifex, so to speak, because they're right up on your face, turn one, and you have to deal with them, and if you don't, they'll take you apart. So it gives you a little bit of breathing room for a lot of your other elite units that Eldar have. So those are the lists that I worry about. The only other thing that you worry about is it's not the the known unknowns. It's the unknown unknowns, you know. So things like that, you know, maybe a gene stealer cult, you know, weird list, because I don't get a lot of practice against them. And then other than that, just some like off the wall army that has a mechanic or this thing that it does that, you know, when you're not aware of it and it happens, it's like, oh, that was the game. And a lot of times with two good players and two good lists, you know, if you have a moment where you're like, oh, I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it takes. And then the whole game is over. So.
Is there anything you're looking forward to for LVO?
Other than
being able to compete and play your game.
Other than, I'm going to win it. I mean, that's the mindset you got to go in, right?
If you don't have that confidence, it's very hard to.
And let's face it, I'm an elder player, so I've got to role play a little bit. You have to be a little arrogant.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go in and I'm going to win it. I at least feel like I know what's going to be there. I don't think I'm going to be caught by surprise. I know all of the competitive builds. I know what almost all of the, pretty much all of the armies can do, what the powerful builds are. So it just comes down to not making stupid, silly mistakes when you're tired on Saturday or something like that.
Yeah, Saturday's going to be a big thing, especially if we have to do
the fourth game. Yeah. And honestly, my army, especially against Castellan, I feel confident that I can beat Castellan, but I don't score a lot of points. It's a cat and mouse game. I'm not going to be in that top four. I already know that. And it's not going to be because I'm trying to game the points, because that's a stupid, strategy anyway. The guys who are like, well, I'm going to win with 26 points every round. And I'm going to dodge all the good players and let them take each other out. And then I'm going to get to the end and then, you know, lose the game by a point and then end up in 50th place because I only have like 100 battle points. You know, so
it almost guarantees you playing that fourth game, and you don't want to be playing that fourth game. Did you ever play in the early GTs that GW put out?
I played in the ones where part of the tournament was a test.
Oh yeah,
and you had
yeah.
to like your knowledge of lore and fluff.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that. I don't care who the bloody handed god is. You know, I'm playing my Ultramarines.
Yeah,
you know. So,
but remember they also had the I think it was 4-2, 4 games on Saturday, 2 games on Sunday.
Yeah, 4 games in a day is just brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done it, and I do not want to do it. I would not want to do it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it. Plus, I have like a bad back. I get hit by a drunk driver when I was younger, and so I've got a whole regimen of crap that I've got to do to get ready. Like, I always have like a ton of ibuprofen in my fifth pocket, and I wear a back brace, and I drink plenty of water, and I sit down whenever I have the opportunity to sit down. I'm sitting at the table. you know, to try to conserve energy.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, what I usually look out for are the unknown, both army lists and players. Because everybody knows the big names and the big builds anyway. But it's those armies, like you said, the unknowns.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are the ones that are scary, and the meta in each area of the country is different. I mean, you go down to Florida and they have like a ton of Tau players, and you look at a list when you pull up to the table and you're like, this isn't that bad. And then all of a sudden you've got like 40 sniper drones, you know, just reaming you, and you're like, oh my god, if I had known that, I would have targeted them, you know, and it's, if you had targeted them, it wouldn't have been a problem, but because you decided to shoot at, you know, some ghost keel or, you know, something dumb that wasn't going to hurt you much anyway, but it's a big thing. I got to shoot that, you know, and those are the mistakes that you make when you're not familiar with an army. So one of the good things about Texas is we've got a couple of really good Dark Eldar players, Nick Gower and Matt Ali. Those are the guys that aren't known outside of Texas. Mm-hmm. They're phenomenal players. I've looked at both of their lists. They're really good lists. They're really good players. You know, it's those guys that, you know, regionally, you know who they are. But, you know, across the country, yeah, nobody knows who they are. And you can get caught. You can get caught by surprise.
Yeah. So predictions for the final eight in terms of armies, not players.
Oh, in terms of armies? I think there's going to be two orcs.
Okay.
Players. I mean, my guess would be Nick and Matt. I think that they're going to be there. I think that Castellan is going to be probably like four of the list, in part because there's so damn many of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in part because there's a lot of people who are good players and are playing the best army that they can get at that moment, objectively understand that Castellan is stupid. So they're going to go with it. And then there's going to be at least one Yanari list in there because I'm going to make it. And then I think, you know, there'll be a surprise. You know, there'll be that.
Oh, yeah. There's always
there'll be that guy who, you know, plays Tau and you know, broadsides are good now. And, you know, they come with a really good list that's a little bit different, you know, and they make it. And there's always one of those Cinderella stories.
Yeah, there's always one. Last year it was, I think, Ben Wright with his Blood Angels.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Who did not play against Eldar that whole tournament until the top eight.
Yeah, and Eldar are just a really good matchup against Blood Angels.
And then I think the year before that, it was a guy with Necrons.
Yeah, which is surprising because GW has been hating on those guys for so long. I feel sorry for the guys. All the Orc players are having their moment in the sun right now. But, yeah, the Necron guys, wow, GW just hates them with a passion.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that there'll be a there's always one guy who has that look about him who's like, I don't even know how I got here.
Yeah.
There's always, but that's what makes the game.
That's
fun.
The beauty of it though, man. You know, like 700 some odd people, you know, you take that list that's just a little weird and it kind of throws people off a little bit. They might choose one of their secondaries is a little bit off and they don't score on it, and then you know, you end up eking out on primaries, and then all of a sudden, yeah, I mean, you're 6-0 and you're in the final eight, and that's the way it goes. So anybody can do it. Anybody can do it if you get a little bit lucky and you have a good list and you don't make any mistakes.
So I'm curious what of your thoughts on eighth in general, since
you've
been
playing
about as long as I have. So
I love it, and there's things that I being an old school player. That I love the templates, you know, and you know, blast markers and stuff like that, because that's what classic 40K was. But it just created so many problems with, oh, it's not touching his base. I see it covering, you know, six guys, and the other guy's like, oh, it only covers one. Like, how can you have that disparity? But it happened, you know, and the formations got out of control, and the game really spiraled out of control, and it was so convoluted that it allowed people to cheat, and it allowed so much ambiguity you know, that the tournament scene itself was just continually rocked by scandal, there was nothing you could do to stop it. And 8th edition just removed a lot of that, you know, he said, she said, ambiguity, you know, it just is or it isn't, and it's a lot better. And there's things that are, you know, wrong with it or things that I, you know, wished were better. I wish, like, you had guess range on artillery.
Yeah, I remember
that. I'd be like, yeah, 42 inches. And then you measured it out, and it was 42 inches, and you just looked at your opponent like, that's right. I just landed some shit on your head.
Yeah.
Those are the good old days, right? But, you know, then you always have wonky stuff like, you know, virus grenades. Like, oh, you're playing guard. You're dead.
Your
entire arm.
Like, or the siren. Remember the minor psychic power siren for Slaanesh?
Oh, what edition was that in?
That was
fourth?
That was Chaos 3.5.
Oh, okay. See, I had a family and was in prison. And so I didn't
Power.
You come out of jail, right? You come out of jail and you're like, what is this? And they're like, oh, it's a smartphone. You're like, wow. You know, so, you know, and there's all this stuff that you've missed while you're on the inside.
I always point to that power when people complain about invisibility, because that power allowed you to be immune to shooting and close combat attacks. So you couldn't even target them.
No, that would have given me, you know, and I would have just, I would have played that. Just been like, that's so stupid, I'm doing that too.
Yeah. So. But I think that's it for tonight. If you can, just give your information one more time so people know where to go.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to come out for a great major event with 120 people, get your ITC points right at the beginning of the next season, go to DallasOpenGT.com and get your ticket. It's going to be a real cheap tournament, especially for a major, because you got a cheap airfare. The venue's like 5 minutes away from DFW Airport. Saturday night, everybody gets a free beer in their swag bag at the local microbrewer. We're all going to meet up there and have, there ain't nothing better than free beer. I mean, when was the last time you got that in your swag bag? So it's going to be great, a great prize support, you know, well-run event with, plenty of, experienced judges, and, you should definitely come.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you.
And everyone else, good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to look for TFG Radio on Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and don't forget to leave us a positive review on iTunes. Also, don't forget to look up our website, tfgradio.com, for all the latest updates. Finally, don't forget our Patreon page. Just look up TFG Radio. You can contribute as much as you want, and this gives you access to exclusive content. Again, thanks for listening, and good night.